I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
It's a crime against nature. It's a crime against the families of our country. It's a crime against the planet, the very planet that we all live on, God's creation. That is what is happening today.
Climate scientists, activists, Democratic lawmakers are denouncing the Environmental Protection Agency after EPA Chief Lee Zeldin moves to rescind a landmark EPA finding that greenhouse gas emissions threaten public health. We'll speak to the NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council, and climate scientist Michael Mann. Then a group of activists from Louisiana have traveled to New York to confront the financial backers of destructive natural gas projects in what's known as Cancer Alley.
We came to the door of the murderer, and the murderer ran from us. I actually found that funny.
Yes, yeah.
Like, we don't have weapons. They have the weapons of mass destruction. These weapons go by the names of
We'll speak to the Vessel Project's Rashida Ozan and her 12-year-old daughter, Camilla, who suffers from asthma, like so many in Cancer Alley. Then to Texas, where Republican state lawmakers are moving to redraw the state's congressional districts at President Trump's urging, with the goal of picking up five more Republican seats.
It's the same old BS. Corrupt politicians having a scheme to rig the rules of our elections so that they can drown out voters' voices and remain unaccountable. We're not going to have it. Not on our watch.
We'll speak to Ari Berman of Mother Jones. He writes, Trump's Texas gerrymander is supercharging a new war on democracy. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Palestinian officials in Gaza report Israeli attacks have killed at least 17 people so far today, including seven people seeking aid near a distribution point south of Khan Yunis. The attacks came as medics and at least two more Palestinians have died of starvation over the past 24 hours, as the trickle of aid entering Gaza fails to meet the needs of more than 2 million people. Hungry Palestinians who searched for a meal Thursday at a community kitchen in Gaza City said they came away empty-handed.
There is no water, no food, no bread, and what forces us to come here is more humiliating than anything. In the end, we return with nothing. Either we come back burned by the sun or we're trampled underfoot because of the overcrowding. We return empty-handed.
We call on all free people of the world and peace lovers to help us provide food and water until this famine imposed on us by the occupation ends. What the occupation allows in terms of truck entries does not equal a drop in the ocean.
As Gaza's starvation deaths continue to mount, President Trump's Middle East envoy Steve Witkoff and U.S. Ambassador to Israel Mike Huckabee toured an aid distribution site in Gaza run by the shadowy U.S. and Israeli-backed so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. According to the U.N., at least 1,373 Palestinians have been killed while trying to access food since Israel barred the United Nations and NGOs from distributing aid in Gaza. The majority of those killed were at GHF sites. Witkoff's trip to Gaza comes one day after he met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem. Outside the prime minister's office, families of Israelis held hostage by Hamas rallied in protest to demand an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Meanwhile, anti-war Israelis held a protest outside a military recruitment center in Ramat Gan in support of two 18-year-old draft resistors who announced they would refuse to enlist in Israel's army. Ayanna Gerstman was sentenced to 30 days in a military prison for her refusal. Yuval Peleg received a 20-day sentence.
I can't be a part of the war in Gaza.
Oh, it's two young women.
The misery and suffer caused to so many people.
I'm here to refuse the genocide, first and foremost, to refuse to participate and to be complicit in genocide.
Palestinian citizens of Israel have been holding daily protests, banging pots and pans to protest Israel's starvation campaign in Gaza. On July 25th, over 10,000 protesters gathered in Sakhnin, where they faced a heavy police presence. Protests are continuing in cities including Haifa, Umm al-Fahm, and Jaffa. In Haifa, two anti-war protesters alleged the city's police commander assaulted them inside a police vehicle after they were arrested at a protest last week. Israeli airstrikes have hit multiple areas in southern and eastern Lebanon in a major escalation. Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz said the bombings targeted a missile manufacturing site run by Hezbollah. On Thursday, Lebanon's President Joseph Aoun called on Hezbollah to disarm and hand over its weapons to the Lebanese army. Hezbollah officials rejected those calls and said they will not discuss disarmament until Israel withdraws from Lebanon and halts its attacks. Israel's continued airstrikes on Lebanon despite a ceasefire agreement with Hezbollah last November. In Ukraine, at least 31 people were killed overnight as Russia's military launched a massive drone and missile attack on Kyiv. Among the dead are five children. At least 159 others were wounded. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky denounced the attacks as vile and said they showed the need for additional sanctions on Moscow. Meanwhile, Russian forces say they've captured the city of Khasiv Yar in Ukraine's eastern Donetsk region. Residents of nearby Ukrainian villages have been fleeing Russia's steady advance.
It is impossible to express how I feel. It's tough. It's hard to live in one place and then tear yourself away. But what can I do? Nothing.
In Washington, President Trump called Russia's attacks on Ukraine disgusting and said he would impose additional sanctions on Russia. Meanwhile, Senators Jeanne Shaheen and Lisa Murkowski have introduced bipartisan legislation to provide $54.6 billion in new U.S. aid to Ukraine over the next 2 years. President Trump's announced a series of new tariffs on dozens of countries. Canada will see tariffs on its goods increase immediately to 35% from 25%, while Mexico will get a 90-day extension to reach a trade deal. Hardest hit is Brazil, which faces 50% tariffs on most of its goods after Trump called for an end to the prosecution of his ally, former President Jair Bolsonaro, who's on trial for plotting a coup after his 2022 election loss. Meanwhile, a panel of federal appeals court judges on Thursday questioned President Trump's authority to impose such sweeping tariffs without congressional approval. During the hearing, a judge called the Trump administration's invocation of the 1977 International Emergency Economic Powers Act suspect because the law doesn't use the word tariff. ICE is launching a major recruitment campaign to hire officers, lawyers, investigators by offering $50,000 signing bonuses and student loan forgiveness. ICE is flush with funds after President Trump's tax and spending bill granted the agency $76.5 billion, $30 billion of which would be used for hiring thousands of staffers to meet the Trump administration's goal of 1 million deportations annually. The Trump administration's authorized the deployment of the National Guard to immigration detention centers in 20 states in the coming weeks, according to a private memo to field offices obtained by The New York Times. The unprecedented deployment will see Guard members assist in paperwork to process the mass detention of immigrants and asylum seekers. In Texas, top emergency management officials from Kerr County have testified publicly for the first time since devastating floods killed more than 130 people over the 4th of July weekend. Two emergency management officials told state lawmakers they were asleep as the disaster unfolded. Judge Rob Kelly is the top-ranking official in Kerr County and directs emergency management.
My wife was at home during the early hours of July 4th while I was at our lake house preparing for a family gathering. On the afternoon and evening of July 3rd, nothing felt out of the ordinary in Kerr County.
Survivors confronted Kerr County officials over their disaster response as floodwaters rose to historic levels. Here's resident Lawrence Walker on the county's lack of an alarm warning system.
So the alarms work. Europeans have alarms. Canadians have alarms. Comfort, Texas, which is right over the county line, has alarms. We don't have alarms. We had the chance to have alarms. The research had been done and the money was offered. But I think the conservative aspect of our commissioners, they didn't want that federal money. And they turned it away.
Medics in Sudan's East Darfur state say more than a dozen children have starved to death in the Lagawa refugee camp amidst a cholera outbreak, heat waves and flooding in the region. The UN says more than 15 million people have been displaced since the start of Sudan's civil war in April 2023, making it the world's worst humanitarian crisis. This week, the Sudanese paramilitary group, the Rapid Support Forces, formally announced it had established a rival government headquartered in the city of Niala. The African Union has condemned the move. On Wednesday, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio postponed a meeting of foreign ministers aimed at advancing peace talks between Sudan's warring military factions. A UN body has told Reuters Rwanda-backed M23 rebels attacked civilians in East Democratic Republic of Congo, killing 169 people earlier this month. Speaking to Reuters, the group's leader called the report a, quote, smear campaign. This is the first time the UN is reporting on the M23's attack as President Trump is pushing for a peace deal between Congo and Rwanda, which would allow the U.S. to tap the DRC's rich mineral resources. In El Salvador, lawmakers aligned with President Nayib Bukele approved constitutional amendments Thursday that allow presidents to run for re-election indefinitely. The reforms also extend presidential terms from 5 to 6 years and will end runoff elections. Opposition politician Marcela Villatoro accused lawmakers of condemning future generations to live under authoritarian rule.
Because once they sit in that presidential chair, they never let go of that power. And we have had examples of dictatorships, and we have had examples of authoritarianism, both from the right and from the left, and neither is good.
Last year, Nayib Bukele was sworn into a second term as president, even though El Salvador's constitution prohibited him from running for re-election. Bukele is a close ally of President Donald Trump. He's described himself as the world's coolest dictator. Florida prison officials have killed a condemned prisoner for the ninth time this year, setting a new state record, with two more executions scheduled for later this month. On Thursday evening, Edward Zakrewski was strapped to a gurney, covered with a white sheet, and injected with a lethal three-drug cocktail. His killing came a day after the U.S. Supreme Court rejected his final appeal for a stay of execution. Meanwhile, Tennessee's state Supreme Court has ruled that a death row prisoner can be put to death without deactivating an implanted device that regulates his heartbeat. 68-year-old Robert Black suffers from chronic heart failure and dementia. His lawyers argued the implanted device, which acts as both a pacemaker and a defibrillator, could deliver painful shocks to Black's heart to try to revive him during his execution. He's scheduled to die by lethal injection August 5th. The Smithsonian's Natural Museum of American History removed explicit references to President Trump's impeachments from an exhibit last month. A person familiar with the exhibit told the Washington Post the change occurred during a content review done under pressure from the White House to remove an art museum director. A spokesperson mentioned a future exhibit would include all impeachments. Earlier this year, President Trump signed an executive order calling for, quote, improper, divisive or anti-American ideology, unquote, to be removed from the Smithsonian. Meanwhile, the White House has announced plans to spend $200 million to build a new ballroom in the East Wing starting next month. The construction costs would be covered by Trump, supposedly, and anonymous donors. And the family of Jeffrey Epstein survivor, Virginia Giuffre, is calling on President Trump not to consider clemency for the serial sex trafficker, co-conspirator and confidant Ghislaine Maxwell. Giuffre was the first survivor to come out publicly against Jeffrey Epstein. She died in Australia in April, reportedly by suicide. In a statement, Giuffre's family members said they were alarmed by the comments of Donald Trump on Tuesday when Trump said Epstein stole Giuffre away from his Mar-a-Lago club.
I think she worked at the spa. I think so. I think that was one of the people. He stole her. And by the way, she had no complaints about us, as you know, none whatsoever.
In response, Virginia Giuffre's siblings and their spouses wrote, quote, "It was shocking to hear President Trump invoke our sister and say he was aware that Virginia had been stolen from Mar-a-Lago. It makes us ask if he was aware of Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell's criminal actions, especially given his statement 2 years later that his good friend Jeffrey, quote, likes women on the younger side, no doubt about it, unquote. We and the public are asking for answers, the family said. Survivors deserve this. That, again, according to the family of Virginia Giuffre. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Environmental Protection Agency has formally proposed revoking the Obama-era scientific determination that greenhouse gases are a danger to public health and welfare because they cause global warming. The endangerment finding is the basis of a 2009 rule that allows the Environmental Protection Agency to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from cars, power plants, and other sources under the authority of the Clean Air Act. It's been one of the most important legal underpinnings in the federal effort to combat climate change. EPA Chief Lee Zeldin called the move to rescind the finding the, quote, largest deregulatory action in the history of the United States. Zeldin spoke on Fox News Tuesday.
After the endangerment finding came out, not only were there all sorts of mobile source emission standards, but they also came out with trying to regulate out of existence all sorts of stationary sources. They started applying it to airplanes and more. We're talking about many trillions of dollars. Where does the authority come from? It came from the Obama EPA deciding very creatively with a whole bunch of mental leaps that they were going to just claim an authority that we believe, after a very plain reading of these Supreme Court cases, we don't have.
While EPA Chief Zeldin was talking about dismantling climate regulations, Fox News was airing an extreme heat alert warning on the bottom of the screen. The graphic said 162 million Americans were under high heat alerts at the time of that interview. The EPA relied on a new report from the Department of Energy to justify the proposal. The authors include several scientists well known for their rejection of the scientific consensus on climate change. Meanwhile, the EPA's own data shows transportation is the sector most responsible for greenhouse gas emissions. The Sierra Club condemns Zeldin's move, writing, quote, as if any doubt remained, the Trump administration has formalized climate denial as the official policy of the United States government, unquote. Democratic Senator Ed Markey spoke at a rally outside the EPA Tuesday.
Listen up, Lee Zeldin. The science is against you. The law is against you. You can try to censor our information. You can try to silence our scientists. You can try to fire hundreds of biologists and chemists and physicists. But you cannot change the science. You cannot change the reality of the harm which is being done by greenhouse gases as they are sent up into the atmosphere. The endangerment finding is backed by the science. It's backed by the law. It has withstood every attempt to challenge it so far, and it will continue to withstand any challenge which is being made.
The Texas climate scientist Manuel Salgado of We Act for Environmental Justice also spoke outside the EPA. He described last month's devastating floods that killed over 130 people in Texas.
Unfortunately, my hometown and the surrounding communities know quite viscerally what the danger of climate change is. Less than a month ago, on July the 4th, the area was struck by catastrophic floods. This flooding resulted in an egregious and, frankly, quite preventable loss of life. Over 135 people, including 27 children and young people, passed away at Camp Mystic. This is all due to supercharged floods from greenhouse gases. I cannot imagine how awful it feels to lose a child in a climate disaster. But what I do know is that if Lee Zeldin, Donald Trump, and the billionaire polluters that they serve get their way, millions of Americans will know that feeling quite well. We can't afford that future. We're going to continue to fight to make sure that the EPA does protect us from the dangers of climate change. Thank you.
We're joined now by two guests. David Doniger is senior attorney and strategist with the Natural Resources Defense Council, the NRDC, Climate and Energy Program. Michael Mann is an acclaimed climate scientist and professor at the University of Pennsylvania, also director of the Penn Center for Science, Sustainability and the Media. His forthcoming book with Dr. Peter Hotez is titled Science Under Siege. Let's begin with David Doniger. Can you explain what exactly EPA Chief Zeldin is doing? Talk about the 2009 endangerment finding and the significance of this moment.
Thank you. Yes, I need to start even further back. The first president to ask Congress for legislation that would cover climate change and carbon dioxide was Lyndon Johnson 60 years ago in 1965. And Congress voted that authority in the 1970 Clean Air Act. So as the science continued to become stronger and stronger, finally EPA began to move towards regulating the pollution that drives this climate change. And first there was a big court case in 2007, called Massachusetts versus EPA, where the Supreme Court ruled that the Clean Air Act definitely does cover the kind of pollution that causes climate change, and that if EPA determined on the science that there was a danger to our health and to our environment, then it had to regulate these chemicals. So that's what EPA determined in 2009. Reviewing all the science, there is grave danger to health and to many, many aspects of the environment, and these chemicals need to be regulated. So the first step was to establish motor vehicle emission standards. And today's cars emit one half as much climate-changing pollution as cars made in 2008. We made a lot of progress, but now Zeldin is attempting, against the science, to revoke the determination this stuff is dangerous and knock the legs out from under his own legal authority to curb the pollution. He would repeal all of those standards for carbon pollution from vehicles, from power plants, and other industries.
Can you take us through the legal history of regulating greenhouse gases from the creation of the Clean Air Act to where we are today, David Doniger?
Right. So as I said, President Johnson asked for legislation. The Congress passed that legislation in 1970. It specifically says that one of the adverse effects to be prevented was an adverse effect on the weather and on the climate. They were informed by scientists back then that carbon dioxide has this heat trapping property and it should be treated as a pollutant. Now it took a long time, but EPA began to move towards regulating at the end of the Clinton administration. When President Bush came in, though, they changed their position pretty much to the one that Zeldin's taking now. We don't have the authority. And a bunch of states, led by Massachusetts, and a bunch of environmental groups, including NRDC, sued the EPA. And as I said a moment ago, the Supreme Court ruled that this stuff is actually in the definition of air pollution, and this stuff must be curbed if EPA determines, based on science, that it's dangerous. So that's the legal background.
I want to bring in Michael Mann. You are a well-known, world-renowned climate scientist, now distinguished professor at University of Pennsylvania. Can you talk about the implications of this? We just heard a clip about what happened in Kerr County in Texas, the more than 130 people who just died there. No one particular weather event, of course, can be attributed to climate change, but the intensity and the frequency of these events, not only in the United States and around the world. Can you talk about what rescinding this so-called endangerment finding will mean globally?
Yeah, it's good to be with you, Amy. And let me first actually add a data point to that timeline that David very nicely provided us. It's worth noting that at the very beginning of George W. Bush's first term, 2000, his own EPA administrator, Republican EPA administrator Christine Todd Whitman, declared that CO2 is a pollutant that should be regulated under the Clean Air Act. And it was only later, when they got rid of Christine Todd Whitman, that they went down this road that takes us to where we are now. And so this wasn't always such a partisan political issue, but today it obviously is. And, you know, what we're talking about can be measured in human lives. As you allude to, those floods in Texas, these extreme weather events that we have been enduring here in the United States summer after summer, the heat waves, the wildfires, the floods, the superstorms. The science is very clear here. Human-caused warming has amplified these events. It's made them more intense, it's made them more destructive, and it's made them more deadly, and it's made them far more unhealthy. And so this really is, you know, a demonstration. What we're seeing play out, these extreme weather events, are a demonstration that carbon emissions do pose a danger to our health, and in fact, to the health of the planet. And so what rescinding the endangerment finding does is take away from the federal government the main lever arm we have, the main tool we have to reduce carbon emissions and to meet our obligations to the rest of the world under the commitments that we have made. And when the United States fails to lead, it leaves a vacuum, and it leads other nations to sort of ease off in their own efforts. And so what the United States is doing here, what this administration is doing, is a danger to the entire planet, and it has to be viewed that way.
Can you talk more about the EPA announcing, Michael Mann, that it'll eliminate its scientific research arm and begin firing hundreds of chemists, biologists, toxicologists, and other scientists, what this means?
Yeah, no, it's already been doing that. They've already been eliminating large segments of the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, scientists who study our atmosphere, our oceans, our climate. In every government agency, they're doing this right now. They've actually defunded the Mauna Loa laboratory, the laboratory where we have been measuring CO2 concentrations for half a century. Which demonstrate the sort of inexorable increase in carbon dioxide concentrations, the famous Keeling curve that many of your viewers will have seen. And so it's literally as if they think that if they stop measuring the state of our climate, our atmosphere, our oceans, if they stop measuring it, it will somehow go away. It's pernicious, it's dangerous. And, you know, we were a country that was founded on science. The progress that we've made, the economy we've built, the infrastructure we've created was because we embraced science. And now these latest actions by the administration betray that legacy.
On Tuesday, the Department of Energy also released a new report that challenges the scientific consensus on the climate impacts of greenhouse gas emissions and provides, quote, a critical assessment of the conventional narrative on climate change, unquote. This is Secretary of Energy Chris Wright speaking on Fox News.
The goal is to restore confidence in science and data and rationalism. That's what enabled the creation of modern science. Then we slid back into sort of a cancel culture Orwellian squelching of science and talking about the science as opposed to the process that is science. So at the Department of Energy, we released a report, which sort of a critical overview of what do we know today about climate science, about climate data, and what impacts that might have on the American people.
So that's energy science.